I'm Frank Vaughn. It's October 28, 2024, and I am here to remind you just what your civic duties are and that democracy dies in darkness. When people ask you to put faith, whether it's in your politicians or your election officials, you never should. Faith should be reserved for God alone, and if you don't believe in God, you shouldn't put faith in anything. Your policy should be trust but verify. When we point out statistical outliers, when we point out things like ballots that are still allowed to come in after Election Day, which could be solved simply by having a deadline a week prior to Election Day, that the ballots that are mailed in have to be postmarked a week prior to Election Day, and any that come in after Election Day are disqualified. That would eliminate one potential security hole. But when the election process is opaque enough that the public has questions about it, that the public doesn't have faith in it, even if the process is honest and 100% above board, which it could be, that's a problem. It's not the duty of an election commission or any oversight body, anybody responsible for running elections. Their primary duty is not ensuring that everybody has easy access to their franchise. Because who says it should be easy? You should have your franchise. You should be able to exercise it reasonably. But the first priority of those organizations should be to conduct elections in such a way that the public, the vast majority of the public, can have faith readily. On site, they can see a transparent process. So when we ask these questions, when we point out massive statistical outliers, like in BC, for instance, the NDP share of the mail-in votes breaking 55%, which actually bucks the trends set in previous elections, that's okay. You should do that. It is not undemocratic. It's actually the practice of democracy to scrutinize as much as you like and to evolve your processes in a way that restores and builds public faith. Now, the BC Conservative Party has indicated that they have faith in elections BC, and whatever the outcome, because we're not done yet, a week after Election Day, we're still not done. But it seems that whatever the result is going to be accepted by the major parties. And that's that. Because the only people who can really contest the elections are those with deep pockets and those who want to litigate. Maybe there's no reason there to litigate. But there's certainly a lack of transparency that should concern everybody. I often see in the comments how I'm just a sore conservative loser and it has nothing to do with it. I'd be sitting here consistently talking to you regardless of who wins elections, that transparency is the most important cornerstone of a democracy. Now, we're moving on to the Saskatchewan election, and I'm about to go vote here in an hour. I'm going to take my family and hopefully show my son the process. My daughter's a little young, but and show him what's going on. But we now have the total of mail-in ballot requests for Saskatchewan. And what's interesting is Athabasca up here really stands out because this is a riding in the far north that there's a lot of distance involved. But it has 31 mail-in ballot requests total. And that's the maximum number of votes that can be cast. This is the amount that are sent out. It doesn't necessarily mean the person's going to vote that way. So the total of all mail-in ballot requests is 32,476. That number cannot change. It should not change. And it doesn't indicate how many will be used. That remains to be seen when we go through the week-long counting process, which I think it's just abysmal. All counting should be done after polls close on Election Day. And we can design our systems to do that, and that would go a long way to preserving public faith. And again, asking these questions and demanding these processes be transparent, be something that the public, the vast majority of the public, can look at and have faith in right away. One of the best ways to do that is you end it all when the polls close on election day. That's how the system should be designed. No ballots should be allowed to come in after election day. That's just, it's not just that it's a red flag. It's that it automatically creates this window of opportunity in the public mind for shenanigans. But anyway, this is the maximum number. What I find interesting about these numbers, if you look at Saskatoon or you look at Regina, usage of mail-in balloting is highest in some of the closest ridings, whereas where in ridings where distance is a bigger factor, and you can pause this and you can look at the numbers and you can compare to a map if you want to. There's people who are always just, break it down for me, or I need links to everything that you're talking about, or show me this, show me that, whatever, as if I work for you. I don't work for you. I give you information, and between Google or Grok, you should be able to come up with these things on your own, even though I do provide links often enough. But I find it interesting that the ridings that have, like Cumberland, 124 mail-in ballot requests. The places where distance is the biggest factor have lower numbers of mail-in ballot usage. And I find that interesting. Now, I'm not going to, at this stage, I don't want to speculate on how fraud could occur, because I don't want to get lost in the weeds here, because I don't want to make the conversation about fraud. I want to make the conversation about potential security vulnerabilities and the right and duty of a citizen to question processes and to demand processes that look transparent and build trust. It's so important that the public trust their processes. Now, Saskatchewan has a better process. Let's just say that right now. But here's the thing. When fraud occurs, any kind of fraud, payroll fraud, counterfeit money, off-branded name-brand products that are falsely labeled, knockoffs, like any kind of fraud that you can possibly imagine. The fraud exists unknown to most people until it is uncovered. The methodology of fraud is not readily apparent until it is discovered and proven and litigated. And it doesn't matter what kind of fraud we're talking about. Companies don't know they're getting ripped off until they find out they're getting ripped off. Some companies and some organizations get ripped off for years, completely unknown, before they find out about it, and then all of a sudden everybody's aware of how it happened. You don't see the thief coming in the night. They just come, they take your stuff, and they leave, and you discover that it's missing in the morning. Which is why you scrutinize. Because you have to discover the loopholes. Now, one of the ways that you could potentially see fraud in an election, for instance, is, and this isn't to say it's happening. This is a speculation. These are the things that, like, if you were investigating a crime, when police investigate a crime, what do? They gather evidence, they look at that evidence, and then they derive questions that they can ask people with that evidence and try to expose holes in the story, and they tease out the truth. And that's how you conduct an investigation. You're not assessing guilt in the conduct of the investigation. You're finding the holes and you're filling them in as you go so that you can uncover the source of a crime. But one of the ways that you could cheat ID verification, for instance, is if a company had, and this is just a speculation, like just a wide open speculation. If a company, say a crypto exchange or some other organization that maintains a database of licenses that has digital images of licenses, you have to submit digital images of your licenses to elections offices to get your mail-in ballot. So there's a potential there that if somebody had a database of licenses, they could maybe do something. I don't know how, but it's one way that it could be done. The other thing, this is really disconcerting to me, and this is just, again, general. we live in the age of artificial intelligence that can generate images, perfect images. And the stuff that you can use online that's a lot of fun and everybody has fun with, that's one layer. But you can also do things with your own video cards, or you can have a small data center. You have programmable AI that can be stored and held on a private computer. It doesn't have to be on a global server. Like, there's lots of different layers to artificial intelligence and generative AI, okay? So something that I've been thinking of long before these elections is the fact that when you have voice verification on your bank account, so you call up telephone banking and they use your voice to verify you, and without asking you any security questions, it bypasses the security parameters and you can automatically do banking by phone. That's out of date. If you have that, in my opinion, you should cancel it everywhere you have it, because artificial intelligence can spoof your voice convincingly enough to bypass those security systems. That is an outmoded security device that is used by almost all of Canada's major banks and institutions. There's a security hole that I've identified today, and you might want to take action on it. That one's actionable right away. But another thing is, various institutions and businesses that you deal with that require you to take a picture with your license, holding a piece of paper that has today's date on it and what you're trying to do. This is also a common theme that you see in terms of security practices. That is going by the wayside, because generative AI can spoof that, especially if you can get the hands out of it. If you can hold your ID and you can hold the piece of paper and you only have one thumb or one finger visibly, you can play with it and you could potentially spoof it. That one I am definitely concerned about. I'm not as concerned about that as spoofing your voice to bypass security. If somebody has your bank card number and they know the phone number of your bank, you can call in using an AI voice and bypass security parameters. And, you know, people would say, well, what would you do with it once you're in there? What are you going to do? Send all that money out? You get flagged for fraud and whatever. Look, as I said already, when a crime happens, when fraud happens, you don't see it until it is discovered, which is why trust but verify. Nobody should shame you for asking questions. Nobody should shame you for pointing out statistical improbabilities in elections, for instance. Nobody should shame you for keeping an eye on the numbers. And if they are, they either are so firmly entrenched in their own ideas that they require constant reassurance that their world is stable and static and never changing and requires no adjustment moving into the future, which is just foolish. The only concrete rule of existence is change. Or maybe they have something to hide. And again, it's not a blanket accusation. Your duty is to ask questions. Your duty is to scrutinize. And no one should ever shame you for that. So I'm going to sign off for now. And I'm going to get ready to go and vote. Day of voting. Best kind of voting ever. We need to roll back mail-in voting so that it's the deadline for postmarks is a week before Election Day. Get rid of telephone voting. And as far as I'm concerned, mail-in voting shouldn't be available to everybody. You have absentee ballots, which means people who are not in the province. There's validity there. And there's the infirm, and there's people with distance. And there has to be a more robust system. If you live in a city, you don't need mail-in. So we could just eliminate that vulnerability. We could guarantee, or better guarantee, access to electoral services, if you will, for those people who need it, while eliminating a chunk of security vulnerability, potential security vulnerability. Mail-ins, when I said they're a Trojan horse, it's because they are. It invites some clever individuals or group of people to look at it and figure out how to exploit it. So if they're necessary, wonderful. But limit it to what is necessary. It shouldn't be easy to get a mail-in vote. I'm Frank Vaughn. I'll see you in the next one. Did you know that I have a website? FrankVaughn.ca, the ultimate repository for all of my work, and a backup location just in case the censors come for me again. And if you like the content, please consider using the donate link in one of the options available. There are no paywalls, there is no advertising, and there is no Patreon, and I intend to keep it that way. Thank you for your time and your consideration.